Joining us now, Jack Stern from Brewer Fanatic. Follow Jack on X by Jack Stern, as well as follow Brewer Fanatic at Brewer_Fanatic. BrewerFanatic.com is an amazing website. If you don't go there, you should go there. They have amazing content day in and day out that you're not going to get anywhere else. So definitely want to check that out. My guy, Jack Stern. Jack, I want to start off first. He joins us, by the way, guest hotline powered by Gruber Law. One call, that's all. I first want to start off with a little bit of a background on you, Jack Stern. Can we start off there first, if you don't mind?
I don't know if I really want to talk about myself. No. Do we have to do that?
Yes, we're going to talk about you. I want background. Give me your background in baseball, not background in covering the Brewers, but your own personal baseball career. Give me your background.
So actual baseball career did not go very far. I like to tell people that I was such a bad baseball player and such a bad athlete that that's the reason that I'm doing what I am now.
It's a beautiful thing.
I couldn't even play high school baseball because I was such a bad baseball player. So that was kind of when I started realizing if I want to stay involved in this game that I love so much, I got to find some other way to do it. So that's when I started getting into a little bit more of the new school stuff, a little bit more of the numbers, trying to find unique ways to break down the game. And I did some blogging for a few years just on the side and on my own page, and ended up, I was at Brewer Ball for a little bit doing some stuff there. And then I joined Brewer Fanatic a couple of years ago, and I got the credential and the press pass and got to kind of build it into everything that I do now. And then along the way, as all this was happening, I got into kind of the coaching side of it on the college side, more specifically finding ways to kind of integrate the numbers into the eye test and integrate it into coaching and kind of find a way to mix it all together. I've had some people say to me that really with where the game is right now, that you kind of have like the old school faction and then you've got the new school faction, the people who like to use the numbers and all that stuff. And it seems like a lot of times those two groups are kind of butting heads a little bit. So I've heard some people say that there's kind of a need for people who can kind of bridge the gap a little bit. And I guess that's what I try to do with my stuff.
So you have MLB teams right now. There was another story out, the Marlins wiping out their human being scouting staffs, going more on video and so forth. There's a lot of teams that have minimized their scouting staffs. There are other that still have robust human being scouting staffs with a bunch of dudes and women that are scouts, Yankees, the Rays. There are still some old school organizations, but more and more are getting rid of it. Well, why? Well, I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist here. You are saving payroll. You're saving money. If I'm taking rid of all those full-time positions and so forth, and I feel like I can get the exact same thing done with video work and numbers and all of this, I'm saving the organization money. Now, the one thing that all of these numbers do, they cannot tell you about a individual person as far as work ethic, drive, character, all of that stuff. Numbers aren't going to tell you that. They're just going to tell you what the player does on the field. But they're not going to tell you if the player runs hard every time or all of that stuff. Cooper Pratt yanked out of that game. Murphy after the game was like, well, hey, he's not lazy. But, you know, this has to be an a learning experience and so forth. I have a issue, I guess, with this. And I understand the same rules don't apply for everybody at your job and so forth, right? Some people can get away with certain stuff, others can't, depending on who you are and so forth. But man, it's real hard for me to listen to Pat Murphy tell me that, oh boy, this is how we do the thing. You know, you run hard all the time and this is how we play. It's Brewers baseball. And then I hear Cooper Pratt after the game and he's telling me, guys are pulling me aside saying, hey man, you got to run hard, man. That's how we do it. And then I watch William Contreras jog to first base on a grounder and I'm supposed to believe this is Brewers baseball. See, that's where it falls deaf to me from Murphy. It's like, okay, so you're going to pick on the young kids, you're going to pick on the rookies and try and send an example. Is that going to send an example from William Contreras? No, because you're not benching William Contreras because he's too damn good at what he does, you know, behind the plate and everything else. So the rules apply to some players, but the rules don't apply to necessarily all players at the end of the day, Mr. Jack Stern. What was your take on Cooper Pratt?
So I think there's, as with anything, there has to be some nuance here, and I think it makes sense that William Contreras is not expected to go 110% running out every single ground ball that he hits because
he's a catcher.
He's the starting catcher. He's got to catch 135, 140 games a year. That takes a toll on your body. I also think if you look at the way that William Contreras is built, he's kind of a little more of like a boxy, muscular kind of guy. And sometimes those guys can be a little bit more prone to pulling things and having hamstring injuries and soft tissue injuries. I think back to like Eric Thames when he was in Milwaukee several years ago. He had a lot of problems with that. So I get it. I think that you can have a different set of expectations for different players depending on what their role is within reason. When I look at that play specifically, though, with Cooper Pratt, I don't think that was bench worthy. I really don't.
I agree.
I think if you watch what happened on that play, I think that he got blown up by a pitch inside. He got jammed. He kind of just stepped off the plate for a second because he got jammed. He thought he popped one up foul. He saw it was fair. As soon as he did, he started running. Was it 100%? Probably not, but really where I disagree with Pat Murphy on this one is Pat Murphy made it sound like he should have been on second base. I don't think he should have been on second base there. Carson Benj in right field, even if that ball was not played great, that guy has one of the best arms in baseball, and the Brewers have the scouting information on that. So I have a hard time believing that Cooper Pratt should have been on second base.
If Cooper Pratt gets thrown out at second base, Jack Stern, is he mad at Cooper Pratt because he advanced from first to second and was too aggressive? Or is he like, well, good try, Cooper. I know you got thrown out, but good try there. Like, is he in the doghouse either way if he gets thrown out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's in a favorable position if he gets thrown out. I think what happens is if he runs as hard as he can and rounds the base, he has to slam on the brakes as he rounds the base, and then he's not in a very athletic position
to
either take the extra base or get back to first. Yeah. So I think it was fine. I didn't see any issue with that. It sounded like Pat Murphy was also kind of miffed that Cooper Pratt has not been getting bunts down, which my argument to that would be, I don't know how much Cooper Pratt has been asked to bunt both in the minor leagues or even in his life, because he's always been one of the better players on every team that he's been on. And he's 21 years old, and he's not the first guy that we've seen come up to the big leagues and struggle to lay down bunts for Pat Murphy, but then get better at it over time. I think of Joey Ortiz. So I personally disagree with how he handled this one, but at the same time, I've said this a lot. Like, I will not hesitate to, you know, criticize the way Pat Murphy pushes his relievers with workloads. Like, I thought it was a bad decision to try to chase a win with Aaron Ashby and with Senzatella when you're on game one of 16 games in 16 days. I think that's pretty irresponsible. So I'll question that. I'll question some of the in-game strategy. This is one of the areas where, even if I disagree with him, I'm going to give him a greater benefit of the doubt, because this is he has always been very good at the intangible side of things and managing the clubhouse and setting the standard and doing all this kind of stuff. So for me, it's a difference of if it's in some other areas, I will say, not only do I disagree, I think he's wrong on this. This one, I will say I disagree. But I do think he probably has earned a little more benefit of the doubt here. And I could hear an argument from him and kind of see where it stands, because this is an area where we've kind of seen it before, where he has benched guys when I don't think he should, and it works out fine. So maybe that's what happens again here. I do have a little bit of a harder time fully agreeing with this one.
Talking with Jack Stern, Brewer fanatic. Follow him on X by Jack Stern here as he joins us on Wisconsin Sports Daily. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer with you. What about the Jackson Chourio at bat towards the end of the game? Because people were asking Pat Murphy about that at bat and whether or not he's going to face repercussions for his at bat. A lot of people, I was listening to our Potawatomi Sportsbook post game show last night saying, look, if you're going to punish Pratt, then shouldn't Chourio getting punished for having a god awful at bat in that scenario as well? And of course, Murphy was like, well, no. I mean, we're 130 games in and da 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 da. And quickly came to Churio's defense of like, there's not going to be any repercussions for Jackson Chourio. I don't know if there should be repercussions for a bad at bat or not. Like, that one I've not seen before. I've not seen anybody get punished for a bad at bat. Was it a good at bat? No. Was it a bad one? Absolutely. I don't think there should be repercussions for that either, Jack.
No, I don't think you ever should. I think any repercussions, and I'm saying this as someone who coaches at the college level, I think any repercussions have to be limited to just effort level stuff or perceived effort level, because any time that you start creating this fear of failure for a player, I mean, that pretty much goes against how baseball works, right? Baseball is a game of failure. You're going to fail even if you're one of the best hitters 7 times out of 10,
right?
Maybe more, depending on what kind of hitter you are. So anytime that you're doing something that introduces a threat for, oh, you had a bad at bat, you can't do that. That's not going to bring out the best in guys. So I do think there is a distinction there, and I'm going to agree with him on that one. You should not be ever really be benching a guy for a bad at-bat, no matter how bad that at-bat was. I mean, if it's strictly performance-based and it comes down to, hey, you're having too many bad at-bats and we got to put somebody else in there who's going to be a little more competitive, fine. But you can't just circle one at-bat and say, I'm going to bench this guy because he chased three pitches out of the zone, no matter how frustrating that at-bat may have been.
I think the other part about this where people are frustrated with Murphy is, okay, fine, so you took him out. But why wouldn't you just put Hamilton at third then and let Joey Ortiz, you know, play shortstop? Is that something? Because Hamilton's throw was god-awful and rushed. I don't even think that's, I mean, you know, you weren't a great high school baseball player or whatever else, but I mean, every coach teaches you the same thing. Make sure the ball's in your glove, set your feet, make the throw. And I mean, I'm not quite sure anything was set by the way Hamilton made that throw.
We've kind of seen the duality of David Hamilton lately, where, and it's been the story for the entirety of the season and the entirety of his career. This is why it hasn't come together for him. It's insane athleticism.
That second base, that double play. That double play where he cuts in front of the shortstop, steps on second, and throws to first. I've never seen that in my life.
Yeah, so you see that he's capable of doing some things that very close to nobody else in baseball can do because he's so quick and so athletic and so explosive. He cannot harness that, and he does not. It seemingly has not been able to develop an understanding of how to use that, how to understand where he is in space, understand how much time he has on a play, because every time he has a play where the timing gets a little iffy, and a lot of times it's plays that are easier than the highlight reel ones. And I'm not saying that was necessarily the most routine play, but it's one that's got to be made. And those are the plays where if he starts rushing himself or he loses a sense of what he needs to do, he just can't harness that athleticism, and it turns into misplays like that one.
So looking back, Murphy's never going to say he made a mistake, even though Hamilton, you know, sitting there making that throw was horrible, and that's Ortiz. That's never going to happen necessarily. But can you say that decision to pull Pratt cost him the game? Is it that black and white?
So it's hard to ever pin anything down to a single moment or a single decision in a baseball game because there's so much that happens in nine innings, let alone, or even nine plus innings if you're playing extras. You can circle all kinds of different moments, so I'm never going to put it on one thing. That was a very big contributor, though, if you look at the way that game shaped up, because you had Hamilton in the field for that misplay at the end. You had Hamilton coming up to bat in a big spot against a lefty late in the game when it would have been Cooper Pratt's at bat. And I'm not saying Cooper Pratt would have got the job done there, but Cooper Pratt against a left-handed pitcher, or even if they stick with a righty against Pratt, I would probably take that matchup over David Hamilton left on left, even though he put a not terrible swing on the ball. He hit like an 80-mile-an-hour line drive that Francisco Lindor had to extend for. But bottom line is, I don't want to pin it on that decision because I don't think you can in a baseball game, but you can look at something like that and say that changed a lot of circumstances late in the game in some very pivotal high-leverage moments, so it absolutely was a factor.
Dustin May on the mound tonight for the Milwaukee Brewers, and not a great outing his last time out necessarily, a very downtrodden Dustin May after the last outing. What went wrong in the last outing versus what went right in that first outing?
Yeah, I think he just was not very competitive with finishing guys off, getting ahead in counts. It was interesting because post-game with all of us in the scrum, he said that he thought his command was fine, not great, but fine. I'm going to have to disagree with that, and who knows, maybe that's a guy who was still kind of in the heat of a bad outing, and it's never easy to talk to the media after a bad outing, so I want to try to give guys a little bit of slack, and maybe he went back and he looked and he could kind of reevaluate and see it for what it was. There was a lot of soft contact. He was not hit hard. He had some bad luck. He also did not put himself in a great position, though, because like I said, it was not good command. He was mostly spraying the ball all over the place. He was behind every hitter. When he did get to two strikes, he couldn't finish him off. He only had two whiffs, and both of those whiffs were to Cal Raleigh, the last batter that he faced in those two innings. So he's just got to make pitches a little bit better. And, you know, I'm not a believer that you need to make a perfect pitch all the time because that's not really how pitching works. Like, if you look at where these guys locate, very few guys are dotting stuff on the corners all the time. But you got to be in the strike zone. You got to be able to get ahead, and then you can kind of expand and put guys away. So I think he's going to be fine. I think he just had an off night.
One last thing that has been a talking point and just popped up in the Dugout YouTube chat from Nconson2302. Runners in scoring position is the difference in almost every game they win or lose this season. If you go and you look at, you know, batting average with runners in scoring position, I think they're top six in baseball right now. Again, we're watching the same team every game. We're not watching every team in baseball with their struggles with runners in scoring position. Everything gets magnified because we're only watching one team. So I completely understand that. But do you think that essentially could be the death of them in the postseason is their ability to hit with runners in scoring position? Because I'm pretty sure every team can make that same exact statement.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at what correlates to scoring runs, hitting with runners in scoring position is always one of the things that correlates most to scoring runs, because that, like, that it just makes sense, right? Guys on second base, that's when you're going to score your runs unless you're only hitting home runs. So this is something that every team goes through. Most teams, when they are not scoring runs, a lot of times it's because they're not hitting with runners in scoring position. This is not a Brewers specific issue. It's something that they've been one of the best in baseball at for nearly a decade now, as hard as that might be for some people to believe, because again, every team is going to go through the bad stretches. And I think everyone in general is more prone to remembering the bad stretches with runners in scoring position. I think you can maybe look at the last few weeks and see that maybe they've been pressing a little bit during certain stretches in that spot, and that probably contributes to it. But to me, this also does tie back to what I've said before of, this is why it really helps to have the long ball in your back pocket.
Yep.
Because there are no teams that are always going to hit with runners in scoring position. I don't care how good your approach is. I don't care how good your situational hitting or whatever you want to call it is. Every team is going to go through this, especially for maybe like a series at a time or a week at a time. Over the course of the season for the Brewers, they tend to be pretty good at this, but they're not going to be good at it every time they play. And this is where, when you're any team and you're in that stretch where, hey, we're just not getting the situational hit, this is where you got to have the ability to just pull out a big homer sometimes, because that helps you overcome that. And it means that you're not entirely reliant on always keeping the line moving, always having to string at bats together. And it goes both ways. You can't always be reliant on the home run ball. You can't always be reliant on making something happen in exactly the right situation, in exactly the right order. You can't do either one of those things and not have the other one in your back pocket. So to me, this just comes back to why the Brewers don't score a lot of runs in the playoffs. You got to have the ability to do both. When they played the Cubs in the NLDS last year, they did both and they won that series. When they got to the NLCS against the Dodgers, who have really, really good pitching, that dried up their on base, that dried up their ability to string things together. And then they didn't have home runs to fall back on either. And the whole thing just fell apart. Yep. So that's the way that I view it.
Is Jack Stern, one of the best. Follow him on X by Jack Stern. Follow them on the X at Brewer_Fanatic. Again, BrewerFanatic.com. Great, great content. Go check it out. You will learn a lot, I promise you, because nobody thinks about stuff the way they think about stuff, or at least not casual fans. At least people like Jack do, but the rest of us definitely do not. Jack, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it, man.